Next case is United States v. Gonzalez-Gomez. Is the appellant ready to argue?
Yes, Your Honor.
The government?
Yes, Your Honor.
Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Matthew Bernstein, along with Captain Cody Donovan-Cheek. We represent the appellant, Private Gonzalez, Carlos Gonzalez-Gomez. Chief Judge, I'd like to request 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Granted.
Private Gonzalez's due process rights were violated for three reasons. First, the unreasonable delay. Second, the no justifiable reasons for that delay. And third, the prejudice he ensued from the delay before the Army Court. Moving to my first point. The delay in this case is staggering. 1,146 days.
How come you never objected to it?
Your Honor, although not specifically objected to after the briefing was completed by the defense, it was brought up, post-trial delay was brought up as an assignment of error for the convening authority delay, but it wasn't brought up specifically for the Army Court's delay. However, as this court has previously held, the assertion of right is one factor to consider out of the four Barker factors, and this factor, although is against the appellant, is only slightly.
But usually when there is a request for speedy trial, it indicates that they want their trial. And there may be times when individuals don't want to go to trial, I mean, whatever the circumstances may be. So asking for a speedy trial certainly gives us an indication that they believe they're being prejudiced, and without that, we're left with nothing.
Yes, Your Honor, I understand your position, but what I would put forth to the court is post-trial delay was briefed to the Army Court, which in and of itself should have shown or alerted the Army Court that he is asserting his right to speedy post-trial processing by asserting it at the because the convening authority was delayed in post-trial. So although not a specific ACCA assertion of right, it should have been incorporated inside the original assignment of error of post-trial delay.
So that's a clever argument, but does it really hold any water? I mean, all it would take is for appellate defense counsel to say to the CCA, where's our opinion?
Yes, Your Honor, and I agree this factor would weigh against us. However, slightly, as this court has previously held in many cases in Moreno and Arriaga, although this factor weighs against the appellant, it is not unreasonable to assume that a convicted person wants anything other than a prompt resolution of his appeal. And the primary responsibility for speedy processing rests with the government. So although I agree this wasn't...
So that's your best argument, is the responsibility for handling these in an expeditious manner rests with the government.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the strongest position. However, additionally, with the position I previously stated and that was briefed, it was raised for speedy post-trial processing in this case. So going back to the first point, the delay in this case is staggering. From sentence to Army Court opinion was 1,461 days. And that was just at the for the sentence to opinion in this case. If we want to look back at this case in context for
Captain Bernstein, let's assume for the moment, not that I've conceded my position or even revealed it, but let's assume for the moment that the length of the delay weighs in your favor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Can you go down to the prejudice aspect of this case? Now, I notice that last week you filed a motion to attach a document or documents.
Yes, the government filed that motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. The government filed a motion. Now, in light of that filing, how does that affect, or does it at all, your position on prejudice?
It does, Your Honor, affect our position on prejudice. And though during briefing in April, it wasn't known that it...
I understand.
Yes, Your Honor. So going to the prejudice argument here is Private Gonzalez-Gomez was in confinement for 4 years from sentence to Army Court opinion until he was released. During that time, he went in front of the parole board, and the documents provided by the government last week show that he was paroled. By looking at Army Regulation 15...
He was paroled or placed on mandatory supervised release, which...
Your Honor, based on the documents provided by the government, and my understanding is he was paroled. All the documents do show mandatory releases of actual Army forms or DD forms. If you look through the emails that were provided, it says he was paroled, and that is my understanding that he was also paroled. And part of his...
The form says Department of Defense Certificate of Supervised Release. I mean, that's the form.
Yes, Your Honor, and I believe that is part of being paroled. That is one of the requirements of parole is a supervised release. And one of the emails in the appendices that was attached from the Army Corrections Command states that he was paroled. And if this court requires further documentation of that, I can provide. Thank you. So, Judge Sparks, getting back to your point of prejudice. Army Regulation 15-130, which was cited by the government, discusses the Army Clemency and Parole Board rules and regulations. And in that, it states in paragraph 3-2 that the board may consider the nature and circumstances of the offenses to determine if parole should be granted or not. And one of those factors to consider is whether the offender committed other or similar offenses. And here, from sentence to Army Court opinion, Private Gonzalez was convicted of two additional sexual offenses, which even at trial, the government moved to dismiss as an unreasonable multiplication of charges. So from trial, the trial point of view of the government was to dismiss these two additional sexual offense convictions as an unreasonable multiplication of charges because they were charged in the alternative. So for 4 years, Private Gonzalez Gomez stood convicted of two sexual offenses, which he shouldn't have been. And that was unilaterally agreed upon by the defense and the government at trial and by the defense and the government on appeal. The government agreed with the trial counsel's perspective and arguments that this was an unreasonable multiplication of charges. So going back to your point, Your Honor, is when he went in front of the parole board, he had two additional sexual offense convictions that he shouldn't have. And
he got paroled anyway.
Yes, Your Honor, he was paroled, but he went in front of the parole board at least four times since he entered into confinement from when he was paroled. And every time he went in front of the parole board, he had two additional sexual offense convictions that he shouldn't have.
So your position is, had he gone, say, for instance, to the first parole board hearing, he might have been paroled, but for these other two offenses that were later disposed of by the CCA? Is that kind of your position?
Yes, Your Honor, it's a possibility that this was a, this, it wasn't a
possibility. Is it kind of speculative?
It's speculative that he may have been released earlier, but it's not speculative that the Army Clemency Parole Board reviewed and considered his additional sexual offense convictions when making the determination of parole. Under the presumption of regularity, this court should look at public officials doing their job and following the rules and regulations that are provided. And AR 15-130 states that they will consider whether the offender committed other similar offenses. Now, even if Private Gonzalez provided the record citations in which the trial counsel at trial moved to dismiss these charges, the Clemency and Parole Board could not consider that. If you look at AR 15-130, paragraph 3-2, Charlie, it states, the board shall refrain from developing conclusions as to guilt or innocence and shall accept the findings of the court-martial as approved or affirmed as final. So even...
Is any of this relevant to us?
Yes.
We don't have jurisdiction over parole. That's a matter of executive grace. So... what are we doing muddling around in it?
Well, correct, Your Honor. This court does not have jurisdiction over determining clemency and parole recommendations. That,
right.
That is the executive. However, when looking at the prejudice analysis of the due process violation here, factors 1, 2, and 4 weigh in favor of Private Gonzalez. Had he gone to the parole board with two less sexual offense convictions, that is prejudice. He had two additional sexual
offense convictions. It's something. Okay. You're asserting it's prejudice.
It's some evidence of prejudice.
Counsel, rather than speculating, and I think both the government and the defense here are speculating as to why he was released early,
right.
Why don't we just take what we have? We have the fact that he was released after 4 years. We have the fact that the CCA opinion came out the next day, granting him 180 days of confinement credit. Your argument would be, had they done that, within the 18-month Marino standard, he would have been out even earlier. Why don't we just take what happened rather than speculate as to what may have happened for both sides?
Well, I agree with your point, Your Honor. Had the Army Corps complied with Marino, their opinion would have been issued 8 months earlier, which would have been well within the time frame that Private Gonzalez could have benefited from that opinion.
Isn't that your better prejudice argument than what may or may not have happened before the parole board?
Yes, Your Honor, that is a very strong argument. But additionally, prejudice.
How you tie up the relief that was given by the CCA to the particular sentence that was left as opposed to the adjudged sentence? Because if it was applied to the adjudged sentence, he'd be in the exact same position as he is. If it was applied to the sentence remaining, it would be different. Do you understand my point?
I believe so, Your Honor, but please let me know if I go off track.
I'm sure she will.
Your Honor,
because it's my understanding that when they give relief, that goes to the adjudged sentence. So you used to have a sentence of 6 years. Now you have a sentence of 6 years less whatever relief the CCA gave you.
Yes, Your Honor. So after the Army Court's opinion, he would have had a 5.5-year sentence.
And he got out after 4 years.
That's correct, Your Honor. He did get out of...
Explain then how he's any worse off.
Well, the prejudice argument with parole, but going to the argument is reduced. The sentence is considered in a multitude of factors at the confinement facility to determine many of things, and one is release dates. The confinement facility looks at what was the sentence adjudged, and here is 6 years. Had they looked at it at 5.5 years, that could have changed the calculation.
Now, again, that's speculative. So you don't have a definite slam dunk, which is this six-month period would have been locked off of his sentence as a matter of course.
Not to be released 6 months, 180 days earlier than he was, but it would be a factor that is considered by the confinement facility to determine their analysis of when he should be released, because the document that they use is based on what is the sentence adjudged, and it was 6 years the entire time he was in confinement. And after the Army Court's opinion, that would have been 5.5 years. And that's a substantial amount, Your Honor. 6 months off that sentence is a lot, and it could have.
Counsel, you're just referring to the release date calculations.
Yes, Your Honor.
You requested from the government the release date worksheet?
Yes, Your Honor.
And you've not received that?
The government did provide that, Your Honor, last week. We do have those documents, but those are...
Is that document before this court? Is it part of the record?
It is not, Your Honor, and if this court would like to consider it, I will attach it to the record. But
you were just referring to earlier in your argument about you being willing to provide this court with additional documents, and now you're talking about the release date worksheet. Why shouldn't this court return this to the CCA, asking two fundamental questions? The first one, having to do with the prongs that we have to analyze, is why was there a delay? Not that we want to get into the details, but essentially ask of the CCA, did this fall through the cracks, or did it take you this long because the case was under active deliberation? And secondly, hey, CCA, you took all this time. You have fact-finding authority. This court doesn't. We want you to wrestle with all these documents, some of which are not currently before this court. Why wouldn't that be the correct approach, rather than, at this stage, grant your client relief?
Your Honor, that is an approach that this court has done in Tui and Arriaga. So that is, at a minimum, that's what this court can do, and the Army Corps does.
You're not objecting to that approach?
So, Private Gonzalez's position that this court can handle this case and provide relief. However, at a minimum, if this court believes they need to, they can remand it back to the Army Corps to consider the Army Corps' own delay in their analysis with their unique fact-finding ability.
But it sounds like, with respect to prejudice, that all you can come up with is what the parole board could have done, might have done, right? So do we ask the parole board? I mean, is that, as Judge Stuckey pointed out, is that really within our purview?
Not within this court's purview, no, Your Honor. But if considering that he went before the parole board multiple times with multiple sexual offense convictions that at trial the government believes shouldn't have existed, that in and of itself should be prejudiced, because that is convictions that the parole board had to consider.
We don't know. That's why Judge Olson is suggesting what he's suggesting. They've got Article 66. They can sift through all this junk, most of which isn't even within our jurisdiction, and pretty much all of which isn't before us, rather than us try to muddle it up at this level.
Yes, Your Honor, I see my time expired, if I could just answer that question.
Yes.
As Judge Olson did point out, this court has done it previously in other cases, remanded back to the CCA, and that is an option that this court can do. We believe that this court can determine it on its own, but that is at a minimum, this court can do that and allow the Army Corps to use their fact-finding powers. And any additional questions, I'll answer on rebuttal.
Thank you. Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Joshua Bannister, and along with my co-counsel, Major Virginia Tinsley, represent the United States. Relief is not warranted in this case for three reasons. There was no Barker prejudice, the requested relief by appellant in this case is unreasonable, and even assuming a due process error, that error was harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Counsel, I have a question. Why on earth did you file a motion to supplement the record with documents that showed that he was released without any of the underlying documentation that would respond to what his appellant is claiming? Like, what was the point of supplementing the record with this form saying that he was paroled?
Your Honor, that was based off a request by appellant to seek documentation from the confinement facility. That is what the government received back, passed it on to appellant, and having looked at that, given a question raised by appellant's brief was essentially the explanation for the early release date.
Why didn't you give us a calculation?
Basically, Your Honor, because at that point, to Judge Stuckey's point, the calculation part seemed irrelevant as the calculation part sits beyond essentially what this court has jurisdiction to consider. It was simply designed to give this court an explanation for the early release date as that just was not present
anywhere. The calculation is something that the CCA can consider?
The calculations, Your Honor? The CCA could potentially consider if they were before the court in the record, Your Honor. They were not obviously before the court at the time the court was making its deliberations. With respect to those calculations, I can brief the court as to how those calculations are created, if Your Honor would so desire. But
I guess not to cut you off from making your argument, but is there any reason, since we can't do that, and that potentially the CCA could look at it and say, we've looked at these calculations and he's in exactly the same position as he would have been, there is no prejudice, why wouldn't we want them to do that? Why wouldn't you want them to do that?
Your Honor, because this court, without having to remand essentially for fact-finding, can determine that there was no prejudice. This court has held in determining the prejudice factor, oppressive confinement is tied directly to substantive success on a meritorious claim on appeal. Now, in this case, the two extra UMC charges were overturned. However, considering this court's recent opinion in United States versus Merritt, that just shows that there was a substantive success. Then we have to look at whether or not the appellant's condition changed. In Merritt, because the sentences were merged at the trial level, appellant was in no worse position for that substantive appeal.
Right, but what I'm suggesting at least is in this case there's at least a colorable argument, right? I'm not saying it's a slam dunk, because I don't know, because I don't have the calculations, and I don't know how parole calculations are made, and I really don't want to know, right? But if in fact, right, the fact that he got 6 months off of his sentence did affect, right, like substantively actually can be shown to put him in a worse position before the parole board, why wouldn't you want the CCA to look at that and say either yes, it did put him in a worse position, or no, it didn't?
Because, Your Honor,
we can't know.
That is correct, Your Honor. In the government's position,
you provided us with nothing from which we could know. I mean,
right.
Do you agree it's unknowable for us based on what we have?
Yes, Your Honor. This court has no way of calculating.
Well, then how can you're asserting that we can therefore nevertheless decide whether there's prejudice? How can we decide whether there's prejudice when it's as clear as mud?
The calculations are clear as mud, Your Honor, however, or at least to this court. However, prejudice isn't based off calculations that are set by regulation, Army regulation, that aren't specific then to the other branches.
Well, how do you answer the appellant's argument that he had to drag this baggage through three unsuccessful parole board appearances before he finally got it, notwithstanding the baggage, you know, i.e. the two charges that were later dismissed?
Your Honor, I would actually cite to what begins at JA 23 of the record, which is United States versus Weaver. That is an Army CCA opinion that was part of appellant's original brief to the CCA. In that opinion, the CCA actually took up the question of parole and whether or not an appellant could be prejudiced by speculation on getting an earlier parole. Now, the CCA rejected that argument on the basis that it was too speculative.
What I'm suggesting is this is an unusual case. I think you would agree, Robert, because there's so much delay that by the time the CCA releases its opinion, like basically it's moot because he's been released, right? He's on parole.
Your Honor, it's moot in the sense, well, Your Honor, the reality.
What I'm saying is they gave him relief, right? He's already gone. He's saying that if he got the relief sooner, that he would have been released sooner, right? We don't know because we have nothing to do with the parole process. But what I'm suggesting is that may be knowable one way or the other and could be resolved, perhaps in the government's favor, perhaps in his favor. But it's knowable, right?
The information is knowable, Your Honor. I would then analogize it to cases where similar issues have come up with respect to employment, where this case has actually this court has gone both ways based upon the information put before the court. However,
we're saying, or I think Judge Olson is saying, is that we don't have the information because you gave us some information, but not that information, even if we could act on that information. All we're asking you is, since someone can look at that information and make a final determination, why don't you say that's fine?
Because, Your Honor, prejudice is based not on essentially parole or good conduct calculation. It is based upon the adjudged sentence, which is what this court looks at under its Article 67 power. So we would be remanding the case back to the CCA essentially for a superfluous determination that does not go to what this court said constitutes prejudice. Prejudice is the sentence itself becomes prejudicial based upon a success on a substantive issue on appeal, which did not happen in this case. The sentence was lawfully adjudged at 6 years. The CCA granted relief, reducing that to 5.5. Appellant was released, by that calculation, 1.5 years early. There's clearly no prejudice to appellant getting released early.
So you don't think that it would be oppressive incarceration if they had decided it sooner, right, if they decided the case sooner, and he, in fact, I don't know if he would have or not, but let's say that they gave him 3 years' release, right? So instead of 6 years, it's 3 years. He served, well, that would be obvious because he would have served more than was adjudged. But you don't think it would be oppressive incarceration if, given the relief, he would have been released earlier?
Your Honor, not based on essentially current precedent for how the court analyzes prejudice, because the prejudice is tied to the sentence, not tied to what a separate military agency could or could not do of its own control with respect to any given sentence.
Counsel, haven't we looked at prejudice a little broader than that in the past? I can't remember the case name, but it seems to me we had a case where we found there was prejudice where there was a lost employment opportunity due to a delay that resulted in an extended sentence.
Your Honor is absolutely correct. I believe it was United States versus Jenkins, but I'm not positive on that. However, in that particular case, Your Honor, the appellant was actually able to show, I believe specifically, the employment. He had essentially a hiring letter.
But the point is that we go beyond just the actual sentence, the length of the sentence. We look at extraneous circumstances when it's appropriate.
The court does, Your Honor. However, if it turns out that what the appellant is raising is prejudice, is speculative, the court does not remand it back to the CCA.
But what I'm saying is, if in fact the CCA can go and look at the parole calculations and say, no, he wouldn't have been released any sooner, then we know that there is no prejudice. Or they say, well, yes, in fact, if they had this before them, he would have been released 2 months earlier, right? And that's 2 months that he served that he would not otherwise have served. Then there is prejudice, potentially.
No, Your Honor, I understand Your Honor's.
What I'm saying is, if that happened, it wouldn't be speculative, would it?
It wouldn't be speculative, Your Honor, but again, what the court would then be looking at is essentially by the CCA giving appellant relief, the CCA then created the prejudice because this calculation is based on the CCA granting the relief. So a slightly alternative hypo would be if the CCA had granted no relief at all and it remained at 6 months, the calculations wouldn't have changed, and therefore then appellant couldn't be arguing, he would have been released and he couldn't be arguing prejudice at all. So in a sense, it's basically...
You lost me with that last sentence.
Yeah, you're losing me, too.
Yeah.
Let me ask
me
you...
Me three.
So, Your Honor.
Let me ask you it this way. So let's say we have a hypothetical case where it takes the CCA 2 years to issue an opinion. The CCA says it fell through the cracks. So we've got that problem. Then, based on the way this plays out, let's assume for a minute we know that the accused would have been released 30 days, 69 days, 90 days earlier if the CCA opinion had come out in a more timely manner. Are you saying that there is no prejudice there? There is no remedy there? What are you saying?
There's certainly a series of remedies available to this court without having to remand. In that particular hypo, Your Honor, it's...
Is there prejudice?
It's possible, however, Your Honor's hypo is, I think, slightly different from the case here.
Okay, but answer my hypothetical first, please. Is there prejudice under that scenario?
Your Honor, applying, I think, the TUI factors in that case, the court could get to certainly a due process violation because the case fell through the cracks at the CCA. In order to find prejudice under that analysis, would, I think, the court is certainly within the power to find it, but it would be shifting this court's precedent slightly in terms of it's no longer looking at the sentence or how a change in the sentence affected the appellant. It's essentially would be adding in addition considerations, speculative considerations of how individual branches do their calculations and early releases to essentially maintain an efficient movement of the prison population.
So you don't think that if in fact parole board would have released him 6 months earlier, that he was prejudiced by the delay?
Not under current court precedent, Your Honor, given that it has to be tied, the court has been very explicit that it has to be tied to the sentence. The parole board, it functions completely independently of the judiciary.
We have an adjudged sentence, right? We have an approved sentence, and then we have a sentence that's served.
Yes, Your Honor.
Your view is the sentence it served is irrelevant for purposes of a prejudice analysis in every case.
The sentence it served is not irrelevant in relation to the other two parts, Your Honor. It's irrelevant by itself without looking at other parts. Because in this case, appellant served 4 years of a 5.5 year sentence or a 6 year sentence if we're looking at the original judge. So it's an interesting proposition to say that getting out a year and a half early, the appellant was, prejudiced on that basis. So the sentence served does not operate independently of the sentence adjudged.
Okay.
So,
I have two questions. One is brief and one is longer. The brief question is, why is the government so tied in knots over the possibility of a remand?
Your Honor, simply based on the current landscape of this record plus the case law, it does not appear necessary.
Okay.
Chief, may I build on that question?
Go ahead.
So in the response to the question I posed, you said, well, if it were a situation where the case fell through the cracks for that length of time, you'd have a due process violation. So in this case, we don't know why it took them 782 days. So even with your formulation about how we should approach this, why should this case not be remanded to the CCA to ask them that simple question? Why did it take you 782 days?
Your Honor, we do know to some degree. We can actually parse the 782 out. We know it was 188 days being briefed by appellant. It was 208 being briefed by the government.
Where the government then conceded all the issues.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the government said, we lose, and yet it took all this time for the CCA to issue its opinion.
Yes, Your Honor, which is what I was going to, is when you combine the briefing periods remain under the Moreno standard. So there was no issue just looking at them by themselves. What seems to be the issue is the length of time the CCA has on deliberation. The government's response, simply, Your Honor, is yes, this court could find, given that length, that that is a problem. However, again, looking at current court precedent and the way the courts have addressed this on several cases, beginning with Moreno, then again in Toohey and Deering, and all the way up to Merritt, is that a certain reasonable deference is granted to the court, and this court has been reluctant to pierce that veil, asking the courts for these kinds of explanations.
But counsel, doesn't the 18-month Moreno standard take into account judicial decision-making? Wasn't that part of that, coming up with that period?
Yes, Your Honor, it does, which is actually then what makes Deering, which followed right on Moreno, so interesting, because in Deering, the briefing period itself took over 2 years, and then the CCA deliberation period was also extensive. The court found it troubling. However, when running its analysis of the reasons for that delay, the court was very clear to separate that deliberative period from essentially the briefing periods. I believe what the court said was the government had no explanation for the delay unrelated to the deliberative period. So at least it seems from that that the court does take into account the deliberative process and accepts that explanation, even in instances, and there have been several, since Moreno, where the court is a little bit troubled by the length of time the CCA
But in this case, there's no explanation.
There was not explanations any of those, other than we know it was in the deliberative process.
And the CCA had the opportunity to provide that explanation, but they missed the issue.
That's correct, Your Honor. The CCA didn't. There is nothing expressed in the opinion essentially breaking down the time, if I understand Your Honor's question, per se, like how long each judge reviewed the record.
Have we ever required the CCA to break down their deliberative process for us? I mean,
no.
I've never heard of such a thing.
No, Your Honor. The courts have actually, the repeated phrase by the court has been reasonable deference. In one case, it actually said we were reluctant to pierce the veil of the deliberative process. So there's never been an expectation that the CCA itemize out why it took so long. In fact, it was not briefed to the court, but one case that I think is on point to Your Honor's question was United States versus Danielo from 2014 at 73 MJ 183. In that case, the court did expressly point out that the CCA did not explain its delay, but there were 2 points different. One is that was an Article 62 appeal, and the court noted that by statute those are supposed to go to the front of the line. And the court had before it in that record that the CCA in that case had essentially issued decisions on 108 other cases plus an additional 362 cases. So I think Danielo is the closest this court has come, Your Honor. However, even in that case, they said we are reluctant to pierce this veil and still found the deliberative process extensive. But it does, I think, make the case separate from this because of these. It was an Article 6.
Okay, you're hammering away on the adjudged sentence. A few years ago in another service, a drawer was pulled open and a record of trial was found. The record of trial was several years old. The accused was in confinement until the drawer was pulled open and the record of trial was found. Oops, said someone. It went up to the relevant CCA, which busted it on factual sufficiency. Out from confinement he came, like Lazarus. Was he prejudiced? He hadn't served the adjudged sentence.
If I understand Your Honor's
was he prejudiced?
There would have been prejudice. However, the court also granted the relief by busting, essentially granting the factual sufficiency. So what made it prejudicial in that case, Your Honor, was the CCA essentially dismissing the underlying conviction that formed the basis of the sentence. So,
he sat in confinement for a substantial period while the record of trial sat in the drawer, holding within itself the germ of factual insufficiency, which when revealed to the CCA, they took it and ran with it. So was he prejudiced?
Under the oppressive confinement analysis, Your Honor.
I'm just asking if he was prejudiced.
Would have been prejudiced, Your Honor, if he was still, basically.
He was still in confinement.
Okay, and he was serving for
the. He was serving the adjudged sentence, which had not yet come to its end, as I understand the fact.
Then yes, Your Honor, under a case like that and other cases that this court has dealt with, including Moreno, the case would have been sent back essentially for rehearing because the adjudged sentence became oppressive due to the underlying conviction.
Due to the fact that it sat in a drawer.
And ultimately, well, it sat in the drawer, Your Honor, but then ultimately because it was also dismissed, it might have been different had it sat in the drawer, oops, and then it was analyzed, but it was found sufficient. Now, it could have been a due process violation turning to the Toohey analysis where the prejudice drops out, but that's an entirely different analysis where public opinion then comes into play. And even then, the court would then get over the hump of was any error harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
So, counsel, let's assume for the moment that this court, in this particular case, finds prejudice. Dismissal seems like a windfall, I think the government would argue. So what would be an appropriate remedy?
Your Honor, I do see I'm out of time. Permission to answer.
Answer the question.
Your Honor, this court has a myriad of remedies available from day-to-day credit to.
But he's already out.
To any.
Okay, but he's already out. So what does credit of that nature, how does that in any way assist, serve as a remedy for the particular accused?
Because the credit, Your Honor, does set the appellant. It is actually similar to what you see in the decretal paragraphs of the CCAs when they change a sentence. All rights and property based on the original sentence are restored to the extent they can be. So that would require the Army to go look back and say, well, okay, given the sentences change, that is going to change the analysis in terms of back pay and that the accused may be entitled, the appellant may be entitled to under such circumstances. And for the foregoing reasons, Your Honor.
Thank you. Does the appellant have a rebuttal?
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, any further questions from this court, we stand on our previous briefings and arguments and request this court grant relief. However, we do not oppose or object to a remand to further develop the record and have the Army Corps consider the important effect of its own delay. Any further questions?
I have one question. Counsel, suppose it goes back and the CCA looks at all the things you've indicated they should look at, and they decide that the amount of relief we gave earlier is sufficient. What then? I mean, is that... It doesn't seem to be very meaningful relief at this point. So would your position still be the same, that only dismissal of the charges is effective relief in your case?
Well, Your Honor, to answer your question, it would be very fact-dependent on how that opinion comes out and is issued. But dismissal of charges is the top of the remedies that this court can issue, all the way down to disapproving the discharge. There's a large range of remedies that be able to happen. However, I think it's too early for me to speculate what the Army Court's opinion would say and then how we would interpret that on our side and determine whether the way forward.
Would you agree that if the Army looks at all the things that you say that they should look at and concludes, as a matter of fact, that the parole board would not, in fact, have acted any differently if they had had this opinion earlier, that there is no prejudice?
If the Army Court's analysis is proper and done correctly, Your Honor, it would be a harder argument to say there's prejudice, but I'm not going to concede that there would be no prejudice. Any further questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court is in recess until 9:30 tomorrow morning.
All rise. Court is adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.